Caroline Cho, you're the event organiser here today. Tell me what's going to happen.
It's called WILD to start off with. It's Wildlife Information and Learning Day. And basically this year, it being the second year, it's completely devoted to rehabbers or wildlife rehabilitators. So the whole day is basically centred on them to give them practical advice and to also give them an opportunity to socialise and to network with other rehabbers, because the job itself is quite a lonely one in that, and often an unsung hero type yeah. job as well, in that they... You know, they may not have the experience on certain things and they need the advice. And an opportunity like this will allow them to meet other people who have that advice.
You're just bringing them all together.
Yeah.
You're bringing bat people together and mammal people and bird people and seal
Everyone
people.
Everyone together under yeah. the one roof.
You've got some really exciting things going on. You've got an app, I believe. Is that right?
Yeah. Fergal Timmen and Simulation Ireland have developed a wildlife incident app. So he's going to be running through that with the rehabbers. So they'll know how to use it in the future so they can use it in their day-to-day kind of looking after injured and orphan animals and birds. So it'll be great.
And I know Heidi Bedell will be here today. What's she doing?
So she's going to be giving a talk basically about the wildlife hospital project and giving okay. an update.
Explain a bit about the wildlife hospital project.
They've already got a green site for it, and so now the whole fundraising is going to start. So it's going to be a wildlife rehabilitation and training hospital. So it's going to be like a central hub, basically, for, mm-hmm. for rehabbers all over the country.
And
so
where will that be based?
That's going to be in the Fingal area.
Right.
So it's very exciting. It's all starting now. So.
And then when that's up and running, you'd be able to bring any wild animal that's injured to there?
It's going to act as a hub, so I think that the technical side of it is going to have to be sorted out. But all the rehabbers will have connections with right. that centre. And also they'll be doing courses and programmes there to educate not just professionals like vets and other volunteers and rehabbers, but also the general public will have courses there as well. So it's going to be massive. It's going right. to be brilliant.
So going back to today then, a number of speakers that are coming. They're speaking. I know Tina Ockney is speaking
yeah.
and I know Nicola Marples is speaking. So they're just going to give their knowledge to try and help the rehabbers.
Yeah, so Tina is kind of, she's BAT Conservation Ireland, and she's not got a rehabilitation background, but she has aspects which will fit with yeah. the rehabbers and will educate them on bats, which are a species that they would not have much experience with. So it's perfect for them. And later on in the afternoon, actually, we're going to be doing a case study on bats. So right. it's all kind of factored in. And Nicola is going to be talking about enrichment. So enrichment and basically how to kit out an environment around an animal to help them recover better, that
now,
kind of thing.
This is your second event. You had a similar yeah. event last year. I think it was over on the far side. It was in Galway,
yeah.
How did it go after that?
In Bridget's Garden in Galway, actually, and it was a great event. It was actually the launch of WILD, so the launch of their charity day.
What happened from last year, from that meeting?
I suppose Wildlife Rehabilitation Ireland wouldn't have been as well known of, you know, at that time, and now kind of the word is getting out. Last year was about the public getting involved. This year is completely rehabilitator kind of centric. But like, you know, we're kind of starting to get kind of a public kind of awareness going.
So 5 years' time, it's going to be a different story.
Oh, there'll be a hospital built, hopefully, by then. Like, maybe even two, who knows? But like, yeah, no, it's gaining in strength the whole time. It's a wonderful charity.
And Tina Ockney from BAT Conservation Ireland, what brings you to Sanarta on this beautiful Saturday morning?
Well, I was kindly invited here just to give a wee talk on bats in Ireland, their identification and handling.
And how many species are there now? Because there's always, is it 9 or 10 or 11?
Well, there's 9 resident bat species on the island.
Right.
And we have 2 additional species that were recorded as vagrant. So they're literally individuals that have turned up over the years.
And you're giving a talk to the wildlife rehabbers here?
Yes.
On the identification?
I'm not a rehabber myself, but because I do an awful lot of bat identification, I'm literally just asked to give a wee talk. And so it's literally just, we do, BAT Conservation Ireland do bat handling and identification training courses. So it's part of what I give from that course that I'm going to give as a presentation today.
Let's have a look, because I see you have them here in a box with you.
Well, we have some dead specimens.
Yeah.
Yes. All on the, I am a licensed person to have such, but I do have a number of dead specimens, just to show people, because often people don't see bats, and when they actually see the size of them, they're amazed by how such small mammals they are.
They are tiny, aren't they?
Yes,
now,
they are.
You have them here, and the wings are open, so they look a lot bigger, but if, imagining that the wings are closed, they're smaller than a mouse, some of those.
They are, like the Pipistrelle, our most common bat species would be smaller than the thumb on yeah. your hand, while our largest bat species, the Leisler's bat, is no bigger than your middle finger. Like, it fit nice and snugly into the palm of your hand. But of course, because these are nocturnal mammals, flying around at night time, our imagination goes a little bit wild and we think these are much bigger creatures than they are. But they're only about 28-32 centimetres long wingspan, flitting around during the hours of the night. But they're small mammals, no harm at all. They're just insect-eating animals, and they're the insectivores of the night.
And do many people come across these, maybe injured or find them on the ground, maybe tired or cold?
They do, especially with the way the weather's been. It's been very turbulent for the last few weeks. We do get a lot of calls of grounded bats. So once a bat's on the ground, we call it a grounded bat. And the thing is, bats fall into flight. So they're designed for that. So that when they're coming out of a roost, if you're ever at a roost, you'll see that they'll fall for about 1 or 2 feet and then they fly.
A bit like a swift.
Yes, exactly. So the thing is, once a bat is landed on the ground, either being hit to the ground by a sudden gust of wind, or if it's a very heavy rain shower, bats are not very good at flying in rain showers. So they end up on the ground, and they're not, if they're anyway weakened, they can't jump back into flight. Mm-hmm. So a bat on the ground needs our help. So we do encourage people, kind of with a pair of gloves or a tea cloth, gently pick that bat up. If it's during the daytime, put it into a shoebox, let it dry out, let it get its space. Offer it a wee bit of sugar water. If you have tinned dog food or tinned cat food, you can offer a wee bit of that. And when it comes to dusk, you can release it. Now, we have all this on our website, backconservationireland.org. We have a section on grounded bats, a wee video to help you how to release it, and lots of information about what to do and how to help a grounded bat.
Professor Nicola Marples from Trinity College, what brings you out to Sonarta today?
Well, I was fascinated to discover about this place. I knew nothing about it at all, but out of the blue on my email, an invitation to come and talk to a group of people who are looking at rehabilitation of wildlife came up, and I thought that would be fun, so I came.
And what will you be talking about?
I'm going to be talking about, well, really enrichments and how you keep animals so that they're ready to be rehabilitated, so that they're ready to go back into the wild.
So you'll talk to the rehabbers, they have the animals. Mm-hmm. And you're trying to enlighten them as to when the best time to let that animal go.
Well, enlighten definitely not, because they know much, much more about this than I do. But just to think about and discuss with them what you have to train the animal to be able to do before you release it, and not to assume that the animal knows everything it's going to need to know. Also, how you keep it so that the natural behaviours get expressed a lot before it leaves the captivity.
And I suppose this would be very important for young animals, maybe a young bird who's fallen out of the nest that hasn't actually been in the wild before.
Yeah, absolutely. A lot of animals, surprisingly, need to learn all sorts of things. Like, we know from zoo work that monkeys, for instance, need to learn how to balance. If you don't give them perches that swing before they go into the wild, they actually fall out of the trees and die. Birds need to learn what's food and what isn't food, and I don't actually know what hedgehogs and foxes and things are, the rest of our wildlife need to know, but these people do, and that's why I want to discuss with them the ideas about what you train the animal to do and how you might go about that training.
And again, what you would feed them while they're in captivity and what not to feed them.
Absolutely, and one of the interesting things is that the world of the populations of each species divide into ones that are fussy about new foods and ones that are not. And there seems to be a very stable balance of fussy eaters against not fussy eaters in every population. In the captivity, we may well be breeding for ones that are very fussy about their food, because we only give them 2 or 3 foods before they go out. So one of the things I'll talk to people about is the idea that maybe we need to give them a much wider range of foods before they go out, just so that the non-fussy eaters actually have a chance of surviving captivity and go out in the right proportions.
Because there is no way of monitoring those animals. Those animals that would have been fed on a very small variety of foods.
Yeah,
once they go into the wild, you've lost them.
Absolutely, and they won't know what to do with novel food, or they may not know what to do with novel food. Alternatively, they may be the ones that just ignore novel food and will try and stick to a diet which is the same as they had in captivity. Mm-hmm. There may not be enough of that out there.
So apart from diet, what else?
All sorts of things, really. I mean, my experience is from zoos, so I was going to talk to them about what zoos are doing and then get the rehabilitators to talk to me about how they might implement those same ideas in their situation. Mm-hmm. Because it's analogous, but it's not exactly the same. So the reason why I'm here is because I'm interested in what they have to say about that, whether some of the things are not at all applicable, whether other techniques are really important for them to know about and also use.
And any one simple piece of advice that you'd be giving?
Watch the animal and think about what its natural behaviours are, because a lot of the problems in captivity are to do with boredom and the problem with boredom can be alleviated hugely by giving them behaviours which we call appetitive behaviours, but that sounds like it's all about food. It isn't. It means behaviours that are satisfying in themselves. So if a species is very, very good at something, so if it's specialised into, I don't know, winkling caterpillars out of tiny spaces between rocks, then giving it enrichments or activities in captivity that involve winkling small things out between rocks is going to be very good, because it's A, going to teach them what they need to know for the wild, but also the skills they're going to need for the wild, but also it's going to keep them occupied. It'll keep them satisfied, so they won't get bored so easily. And if you think about it, that's totally easy for us to understand, because if you think about something you're really good at, say you're a concert pianist, will sit all day not getting at all bored playing the piano. Anybody else who's not very good at the piano will kind of do it for half an hour and then get bored. But if you're very good at something, then expressing that behaviour is in itself very satisfying.
And a happy animal is more likely to survive in the wild.
Absolutely, and a happy animal is more likely to survive in captivity too. So to get them as far as the wild, keeping them with enrichments that actually work for that species is really important. And so thinking about what that species does in the wild and giving it the opportunity to do that in captivity is the key to the whole problem.
Dan Donher of Kildare Animal Foundation, why are you here today? Surely you're not coming to learn something. You may be giving these talks that you've done so much rehabilitation.
I'm here to meet other rehabbers from around Ireland and get to know, you know, network and we'll be able to help each other then and down the line. So that's why I'm here today.
You must have rescued, rehabbed and released hundreds of different animals. What's the most interesting story that you have that you can tell us?
It's funny that you say that, Terry. Just last night we released a young barn owl that we got in 2 months ago. One of our volunteers was called to a veterinary clinic and picked up the owl and opened the box, and the owl was on its back, practically looking dead. So she asked the vets to just check over before she left, and the vets came back and said, unfortunately, the owl had passed. So she asked, could she have the body back, because she knows we do some teaching with cadavers and stuff. So she brought it back to the centre, and I had a look at it and checking it over, and its claw slightly moved, just slightly, and I said, I got the stethoscope out and a faint heartbeat there. So got the incubator on, got him warmed up, him some fluids and brought him home with me for 2 weeks, just really round the clock care, and then started slowly but surely come around. So the last few weeks we've had it in a pre-release pen, getting up its flight muscles, and just last night then we went and released him, and off she went.
That's incredible.
Yeah, it was amazing.
When you saw that owl first, did you think it was dead?
Looking in the box, I thought it was dead, yeah.
And it was cold?
It was cold, yeah, cold, on its back.
Do you think had happened to it in the first place?
So we think it was found on a roadside, so we reckon a car had clipped it or got caught in the kind of wind and flipped over, so
and
had a head injury.
Was there any obvious damage to the animal?
Absolutely not, it looked perfect. So it was just some kind of head injury, we reckon it had.
Yeah, stunned?
Stunned, yeah, so.
And came back to life.
It came back to life.
Lazarus,
yes.
Did you call it Lazarus?
One of the volunteers did.
And you actually videoed it.
We did, yeah. We have a nice video of releasing it and going off into the wild.
We can put that up on the website. What do you hope for from today?
I hope that everybody gets to network together, gets to know each other. It's a small community in Ireland, rehabbers, so it's important that we all work together and help out. Some people might be able to take certain species where maybe I would be able to take them, or if I'm too full, maybe I could pass them on to someone else. So I think it's really important that everyone gets to know each other and works together.